Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.
Today's program is brought to you by the Dairy Farm Families of Wisconsin, the Wisconsin Milk Marketing Board. Did you know that today Wisconsin produces more than 600 varieties, types, and styles of American, international style, and original cheese that win more awards than any other state or country? To learn more, visit eatwisconsincheese.com.
Hey, 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 I'm Jimmy Carboni from Beer Sessions Radio. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hello and welcome to Cutting the Curd. This is Greg Blaze recording live on the Heritage Radio Network from Roberto's Pizza in Bushwick. Before we begin in earnest, I have a quick public service announcement. Don't forget that this Friday, October 23rd, is the last day to fill out the Cheese Coalition's Raw Milk Cheese Consumption and Attitude Survey. As the FDA reassesses its stance on raw milk cheese, this is a really easy way to make your voice heard as the Cheese Coalition gathers data for the FDA's request for info on consumer attitudes. So just go to cheeseofchoice.org and fill out that survey. So on today's episode, we're going to talk all about Wisconsin and specifically about the Wisconsin Milk Marketing Board's most recent cheese tour. I'm happy to have a couple of guests today that are on that tour. First off, I have Heritage Radio head honcho and engineer Jack Inslee, who traveled with a bunch of cheese people through Wisconsin. How are you today, Jack?
I'm great, man. I'm thrilled to be on the show. First time on Cutting the Curd on mic.
Nice. I've been away for a while, and it's really nice to be here, and it's really great to be here with you.
Thank you, man.
And Roberto's Pizza. And I'm also excited to have James Gentry on the line. We're going to get to James in a second. James is an amazing cheesemonger from St. James Cheese Company down in New Orleans. And he is the wholesale guy down there and also was the American Cheese Society's official cheesemonger and just generally a cheese stud who knows what he's doing and knows his stuff. So I wanted to ask you, Jack, just before we got started, how was the trip for you?
It was awesome, man. Like, I now have a much deeper understanding and appreciation for what you do and what Emily does and what Anne's done all these years and kind of the whole cheesemonger thing. I mean, being surrounded by nothing but all-star cheesemongers for a few days, it really kind of, like, taught me a lot about the craft.
Yeah, so what do you think about cheesemongers and cheese people in general? Are we sane? Are we insane? Are we tolerable? Intolerable?
Definitely tolerable, bordering on insane in the best way possible.
That's great. So the tour was just a couple days, right?
It
was
we were there for we got there Sunday afternoon and we left Tuesday afternoon. So, you know, kind of like two days ish.
Yeah, but I bet it seemed like a little bit longer and a little bit shorter than that, depending.
Oh, yeah, we covered a lot of ground.
Yeah, you put on the miles.
We sure did.
So I want to introduce James Gentry. How are you doing today, James?
I'm great, man. How are you guys?
I think we're pretty good.
Yeah.
Thanks so much for giving us a little bit of time to come on the show today. We really appreciate it.
Not a problem, man. It's my day off. I can talk all day if you want.
Nice. Like, we got other shows, but, you know, I'd like to talk all day, too. I haven't been in here in a little bit. So was this the first Wisconsin Milk Marketing Tour that you had been on, James?
No, I went on one 3 years ago, summer of 2012, when I was at Whole Foods, when they were trying to train us up before the first CCP exam. So I actually was there for a week, and we were studying at Babcock Hall, which is colloquially known as it's the Center for Dairy Research at the University of Wisconsin. So we took all their short courses in a whole week, and then, I mean, throughout the day of taking these courses, we'd go on visits like the ones Jack and I did. And the only repeat visit I had was a chalet co-op this time, the Limburger Maker, which is fine by me. I love Limburger, and I love going to see their facility, and I'm kind of a Limburger fanboy, so nice. I didn't mind going there again at all.
That's awesome. So, you know, as we know, Wisconsin is, you know, the cheese mecca, or one of the cheese meccas of America. You know, they have more skilled and licensed cheesemongers and cheese makers than any other state, and they produce over about 2.8 billion pounds of cheese each year, and that's about a quarter of all of the domestic cheeses produced in the country are made in that state. And those quantities continue to grow to meet the nation's demand for quality and variety. There's a lot of places that make cheese in Wisconsin. So where did you guys go? Jack, where was the first place that you visited?
The first place we went to was Raleigh's, and we got to see some Dumbarton Blue up close in person.
How was that?
Awesome. I mean, that's one of the few cheeses I've had a bit here in New York, and I was wondering why it's all over New York if this is such a small Wisconsin dude. And in the tour, he's telling us one of his first distributors was in Brooklyn. And
yeah, that'd probably be Food Matters again.
I think so.
Yeah, Brad Dubay brings that stuff in. The Dumbarton is really popular amongst cheesemongers in Brooklyn and amongst cheesemongers and retailers everywhere. James, you guys carry that down there too, right?
From time to time. We don't currently have it, but we've definitely had it in the past. And I was pretty stoked to go. I don't have much experience with that cheese, actually.
Me neither.
It doesn't make that much, and distribution's kind of hard for us down here at times. But we usually go directly through the maker when we get his stuff. But that's just really the only way we can get it.
Yeah. Just as an aside, I was wondering maybe if you could tell us a little bit about the operation that you work with, St. James Cheese. And just, and, you know, New Orleans is a place that, amazingly enough, in all my travels, I've never been to, but it's sort of like a holy grail of places that I need to get to before I you know, kick it. And I was wondering if you could just tell us a little bit about the St. James Cheese shop and what you do there, and also the relationship, you know, between the city of New Orleans and cheese.
So the St. James Cheese Company has been around for almost 10 years. It was started by Richard and Danielle Sutton. There's a really good story on our website, you know, about how they, you know, they met at Tulane College and then, you know, eventually moved to London and ran Paxton Whitfield, which was a 200-year-old cheese shop in London. And then they wanted to open a cheese shop back in the United States, and they chose New Orleans, you know, to go back to sort of where they met and, you know, and started their relationship. So it started small. We're still relatively small. We're about to open a new cheese shop, restaurant, cheese bar thing. We'll all be running a cheese program. And we do a lot of wholesale to restaurants. Wholesale manager, Chad Bourgeois, he's got it down on lockdown. Guy's a machine. You know, he used to work in a bunch of kitchens around here, and I'm just happy to help him out when I can. And the relationship with cheese to New Orleans is difficult. I've only been here for about 3 years. But from what I understand, from what I've been told, is that there really was no real relationship with cheese in New Orleans. It's not really a dairy-producing state, never really has been, in terms of commercial viability for dairy. You'll see little tiny cheese, I don't even know what to call it, like nano cheese production and little farmers markets here and there. You'll see some guys with some goat cheese and stuff, but that's about it, and that's only occasionally. There was no relationship really until St. James kind of stepped into this cheese desert and made the relationship. So now,
right,
you know, most of the restaurants in town that have a cheese slate proudly say that they get their cheese from us, and I'm happy to be part of that. I'm happy to be part of like the first generation of cheese in New Orleans.
Yeah, it's awesome to pioneer stuff like that. It makes you feel good. And what was your reaction? It must have been a stark difference when you were trolling around in Wisconsin and just being immersed in the dairy culture there. It must have been a little bit of a different, not a shock, but just a little bit of a different vibe for you.
Well, yes and no. I mean, I grew up in the Central Valley of California, and we were never more than one or two friends or family members away from someone who had a farm.
Sure.
Really good friend of our family's, the Machados, had a dairy farm. And, you know, they would have parties and stuff out there. So being on an actual dairy farm wasn't that weird, and being on a farm wasn't that weird. But being in, like, a cheese-making facility for the first time I did was, I don't know, it was kind of like seeing in motion all the things you've kind of had in your mind's eye. And you're like, you know, intellectually I know how it's done. You know, I know that you pour the milk in the vat and you add the rennet and the black starters and all that. But then to actually see the mechanics of it, to see the machinery that does it, is, I'm not even going to say weird, but it's like, it's nice. It's nice to finally put all those pieces together into one sort of visual representation of all the things you've been thinking about.
Yeah, that's actually what I was going to ask you and Jack about, or just to speak to. I know that there's a sensory quality to being there that you don't even get around the counter. Just this sort of sensory overload of being in the make room was pretty intense for me, I know. And you and I, James, have maybe been around that a little bit more than you, Jack. But what did you think of the make room, you know?
Well, I was surprised first at Raleigh's how small it was. Tiny, like really, really tiny. And then we moved over to Hook's, which is a little bit bigger, and we actually saw them breaking up curd by hand. They were making their Parmesan, and that I couldn't believe that it was such a manual process.
Sure.
Yeah, like just piece by piece by piece by piece in this huge vat, breaking up all these curds by hand. That kind of blew my mind.
What was your... James, what was your sort of like the highlight? What was the best maker, or if you had one, that you visited while you were on the trip?
Well, I mean, everyone's doing a great job up there.
Of course.
But, I mean, visiting Andy Hatch is probably... I mean, I've met him a few times now. Maybe gun to his head, he might say we're friends. visiting Andy was great, because most of the cheesemakers I've ever met are of a different generation than I am, right? Andy is my generation.
Sure.
And I think we're like the same age, I think. And so to speak to him is to speak to the future. And so I appreciate seeing Andy and talking to Andy, because I think Andy and I are like sort of trying to do the same things. Like, I'm a certain generation of cheesemonger and he's a certain generation of cheesemaker. We're looking to the future. And we also communicate differently. Like, I can communicate with Andy better than I can communicate with someone who's like 55, 60 years old. Just a generational thing. So, I mean, for instance, when we first went there, Andy was like, "You guys don't need to see vats or makerooms, do you? You want to just talk about cheese?" And we're like, "Well, it's kind of your vats. I kind of want to see your stuff, though, dude." But he kind of understood that, you know, we've been around the cheese places and we don't necessarily need to see all the mechanics of the stuff. And whereas the other guys are always, they're giving their tour, they give to everybody. And this is not a knock on anybody at all. It's just a different kind of understanding of what we're all about as cheesemongers. And I think he understands that, because he comes to CMI, the Cheesemonger Invitational, and he does these things, whereas the other older guys don't really know, I think, what's going on the shop level the way someone like Andy does. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and also, and because I've toured around and I've seen industrial cheesemaking also is an intense process. I think that a lot of times those guys, when they're bringing in millions and millions of gallons of milk, you know, their heads are sort of in those vats. You know, they operate not in a vacuum, but maybe they have less time, you know, to do those sort of things.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, did you guys go and visit Klondike while you were out there? Though we visited them, they're a big like a feta producer and yogurt producer out there when I went, and they had a massive operation. I actually dug the machinery, because it's old school machinery, you know what I mean? And
yeah.
And the machinery is still run by people. I totally appreciate the sort of hands and arms in the vat, and Andy's farm is gorgeous. When you're there, you're sort of transported. It's just its own place, you know. I like to talk to the old timers, because the old timers have this sort of attitude like I have, is sort of like, yeah, we make cheese, what of it, you know? You know,
100%. It's like the Limburger at Chalet. It was so freaking old world and awesome.
Yeah. But I also appreciate what you're saying, James, because it's good to, like, it's good to know who your people are. You know what I mean? Like,
and saying who is my favorite person to visit, like, I have to extract that. Like, it's not like it was like, oh, easy choice. It was great to see Andy. But it's, you know, I have to, I thought about that, because I thought you guys might want to talk about that at some point. Like, what was my favorite visit? But it's also the romance of his farm, like you're talking about, and me living in a flat swamp these days, any kind of elevation is beauteous to me. And so to just sort of hang out and do the the Von Trapp family thing and on the hills of his farm hanging out with his cows.
Sure.
It's pretty great.
100%.
And I have been to Klondike. Klondike is, like, it's a monster.
It's huge. It's
that place, and the machinery is, like, I believe that it's like they imported like German machines.
They did.
Right?
There's like a German Camembert making machine
in Germany.
Yeah.
And so they were the only machines that could handle the curd gently enough to make their feta. And at one point, I remember the machine got locked up. And the guy, the son who runs it, man, he had to like run and did like this Indiana Jones slide underneath the line and like crawled up the machine and like there's buzzers going off and he just like fixes it real quick and then comes back down. He's like, all right, where were we? I was like, this guy's amazing. Like,
yeah,
he knows every inch of this gigantic factory, and it's so great.
That's the thing. Like, I love to see the producers because you see that stark contrast between farmstead, artisan, and industrial production, and you realize that everything has its place. You know what I mean? Like, I think that as cheesemongers, we tend to be, you know, we gravitate towards, we want to be able to say the cheeses we're selling are farmstead, the cheeses we're selling are artisan, but industrial milk, you know, and cheese production, if it's done in the right way, is like a massive, you know, positive thing that generates dollars and support for everyone, you know, and those guys being able to move all that milk through that facility and turn it into good cheese through all of that crazy Willy Wonka-esque machinery is pretty awesome to me, you know?
Oh, I agree.
So we're going to take a short break, and then we're going to come back and talk more with Jack and James about their little cheese adventure. Thanks a lot.
The Dairy Farm Families of Wisconsin and the Wisconsin Milk Marketing Board are proud to underwrite Cutting the Curd on heritageradionetwork.org. Wisconsin cheeses have an illustrious heritage of more than 170 years of quality and craftsmanship. During this long and rich history, the art and science of cheesemaking have been captured in time-honored traditions that produce cheese varieties of unsurpassed excellence. Today, Wisconsin produces more than 600 varieties, types, and styles of American, international style, and original cheeses that win more awards than any other state or country. To learn more, visit www.eatwisconsincheese.com.
Hello, and welcome back to Cutting the Curd. This is your host, Greg Blaze. I'm here with Jack Inslee and James Gentry. So I wanted to just sort of backtrack a little bit. I know we were talking about industry and artisan and the trip in and of itself, but I wanted to reference the survey I mentioned at the beginning of our show. And I wanted to ask both of you guys, you know, if you learned anything new about the challenges or benefits of producing or eating raw milk cheese while you were in Wisconsin. Jack, what's up?
Well, I'll say I did get to taste the Rush Creek that was like fresh off the press 2 weeks after being made. I know he dealt with some things with that, and it was nice to get to taste that so young.
Yeah.
But James, yeah, I don't know. What we didn't really get too much into the discussion on raw milk there on the tour.
No, we didn't really, because I mean, the only person making raw milk cheese was Andy, I think. I don't think anybody else was making raw milk. I think that we're all going to echo the same sentiment, though, that none of us think there's anything wrong with raw milk cheese. And if anything, it's usually better than pasteurized versions of the same cheese. The only discussion we really did have about it that I remember was talking about, you know, sometimes you get that tingly burn in your mouth when you eat certain raw milk cheeses. And we talked about why and how we don't really know why, but how Andy is saving all these samples from all his batches, and he's got this, like, what I can't imagine is probably just an amazing backlog, like, cheese sample library, and he freezes milk from each batch. But that was really it. We didn't really talk about it. I think because when you're amongst people like we had there, it's a foregone conclusion. You know, we all think that you should be able to age on wood, and we all think you should be able to have raw milk cheeses. So it's not like we're having to convince each other of this. You know, we'd rather, I think, talk about other things that we've already moved on from in our minds, I think, in a certain light.
100%. But what about you as a consumer, Jack? What did you have? Do you have an opinion on that?
Well, you can tell, like James said, you can tell the difference, 100%. And I mean, like, I want it as a consumer, of course. And I think one of the things that blew my mind is the subtle differences you can tell, like James was just kind of alluding to, day to day from a raw milk cheese. And like Andy was saying, he's like, we might get one of these Pleasant Ridges that's just like mind-blowing. And why? Because, I don't know, maybe something about that day, maybe that particular patch of grass the cows were on. And I think that'll come through a little bit more with the raw milk cheese. That's what I took away.
Nice. And I also, James, I agree with you, Ed, but I also know, or in my mind, I also feel like because we definitely know, you know, those of us with experience and those of us who do the work, we definitely know that that's what we want, and that's what we want to support. But I think it's always important to just be super vigilant, because large organizations that are slowly moving forward are going to continue to move forward, and they just sort of try to outlast. They just keep on putting in more legislation or more this and more that, and try to outlast people's, you know, resolve. So I agree, but I think it's always important for us to remain sort of vigilant and just keep paying attention to that. And that's why I think we all need to just encourage as many people as we can to fill out that survey, you know? But
Absolutely. I mean, for the average person hanging out there, non-cheese professional out there listening, go and vote, because you could lose the cheeses you love. You really could.
Right.
And that would be super sad, and it'd be bad on a... It would just be bad on like a food level in terms of the food you can get, and it could, you know, potentially be like a weird I'm searching for the right word, but I can't remember right now. Like a bad cultural thing,
exactly.
Like no pun intended.
No,
you know, you lose certain cheeses in the way that they were made, and I don't know. It's just I would be really upset if it happened.
Absolutely. So did you guys, so who else did you guys visit while you were out there? So you said you visited a Limburger producer, you visited Andy. Did you visit any dairy farms while you were out there? No?
No, well, I mean, Andy's farmstead, but we didn't really see any milkings or anything.
Yeah.
It was mostly just visiting the manufacturers.
We did see Emmy Roth, which was, a big one. Like,
right.
You were saying, the kind of Willy Wonka sort of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. And what kind of stood out to me there is they said they're transitioning to organic, which means they've got to like completely replace their big brine bath, you know, because
yep.
Every step in the chain has to be organic.
Sure.
And that just seemed like such an enormous undertaking, and it was interesting to hear a big, big, big facility talk about what that means and what it's going to take to go through that.
That's always...
Well, I think another important thing to talk about in terms of the... visit Emmy Roth was that we weren't allowed to go inside.
Yeah. Right.
Whereas three years ago we were allowed to.
Yep.
And at the very beginning of the tour they said, hey, and they're always almost saying it like somberly, you know, like they were really sad that we couldn't go inside. You know, and they're talking about how, you know, we take food safety very seriously. And so they don't allow anybody in anymore, you know, except you work there. And so I mean there's I think, you know, we've been scared by everything, and so it's to the point now where you can't even go into a cheese making facility and visit it. And they think that Jody Wishy said that she thinks in about 10 years, even the little tiny guys that we visit, they're not going to let you in because it's just the regulations are going to be too strict.
Yeah,
and that's brutal. I visited them a couple years ago, and it was the same thing. It's just not. I mean, it's wonderful to be in and around the facilities and just to know, you know, the knowledge that you gain, either if it's just a guy who loves food like you, Jack, or if it's a professional, you know what I mean, who can translate that back to their customers. Dude, that big glass wall between you and the make room is definitely like a harbinger of like the future, or as we could go towards it, you know. And that's – I don't like that. I don't like that at all. You know, I think we're very scared. I agree with you. But that's why things like that survey and information are so important. That's why those tours, while they're so awesome to go on and be able to eat and be in around all of that and get that sensory experience, you got it. It's that information that's super important, you know?
Yeah, but you know what? The other side of the coin, though, is that if those kind of strict regulations come in, you know, we can't go inside cheesemakers' facilities anymore, but we get to keep raw milk and aging on wood, I think I'd take that trade-off.
Yeah, me too.
You know, if they stop hassling us about, you know, us, like I'm a cheesemaker, stop hassling, you know, cheesemakers in the cheese industry about, you know, about raw milk, you know, I would never step foot in another cheesemaking facility. I'd be like, all right, that's fine, I get it.
No, you know? That's great. And actually, I agree with you. I agree with you 100%. You know, that's a really important point to make.
And over at Raleigh's, he was telling us, and James, maybe you know a little bit more about the backstory here, but about all the problems he went through with the wood at his facility.
Wait, who? Again, I'm sorry.
At Raleigh's.
Oh, yeah. He didn't test positive for anything, but it was, this is what it was. It was when the whole uproar started bubbling up again last year.
Right.
He was one of the loud voices saying, hey, there's nothing wrong with aged wood, because he had just bought, $800,000 worth of wood?
Yeah.
Or something like that. And, you know, he knows what he does to his wood aging shelves to keep them clean and to keep them safe. And he had just made a huge investment in what makes his cheese. And here the government was coming in, not to sound like some, the government was coming in guy, but the government was coming in and telling him that you can't do that. You know, you're not allowed. You know, you can't make the thing that makes you have a livelihood. And so he was obviously upset. And, what was it? It was like 6 days later. They were like, okay, the FDA kind of like calmed down. But I think that they're just, I think they were stoking the fires. I think they're definitely going to be back.
Of course they're going to be back.
I think with a better case in their eyes for not letting us have raw milk and not letting us have cheeses aged on wooden boards. And I think it's going to have to get to a point where, and this is what a lot of Tom Perry's research, I think, what he's doing for his DZTA scholarship is trying to make it so we have a foundation in the United States where we can have our own science to back up why it's fine to use wood and raw milk, as opposed to having it always run over to Europe and be like, look, tell our guys it's cool.
Right.
You know, tell the FDA it's cool. You've been doing it forever. We have to get to a point where we're like, we don't need to rely on the European makers anymore. We can be like, look, we have the evidence. We have the science. It's fine. Back off.
Yeah. And that's, again, that's why those tours, and that's why all of that information provided in those tours is so important. You know, and that's why entities like the Wisconsin Milk Marketing Board, take you on those things. You know, and how many people were you on the trip with? A dozen?
I think it was about 10, yeah. Maybe total.
Yeah, like 10 or 12.
10 or 12. Like 10 plus me and Kirsten.
Nice.
Yeah. I mean, what blew me away really too, Greg, is like, I think it's so awesome that Wisconsin Milk Marketing brought all these cheesemongers together, period. Because, like, James, hearing all you guys and all the side conversations you were having, like, that's beautiful stuff to me. And, I mean, it's worth all the trouble for Wisconsin Milk Marketing to bring you all together to hear those conversations and see those bonds get kind of deeper. I know you all knew each other from the Cheesemonger Invitational, but I don't know. I thought that was awesome.
Was that the criteria? Were there all guys from CMI and gals from CMI, James, on the trip this time?
Yeah, it was top 10 finishers from San Francisco and New York this year.
That's awesome. That's great.
Yeah.
So you got to reconnect with some people that you competed with and just sort of mix it up with them.
Yeah, I met some new people. I hadn't met any of the San Francisco people before. I'm not really connected to their cheese scene very deeply. Like, I know a couple people out there, but even being from the West Coast, I don't know those folks very well. I know the Seattle scene very well. I was there for 7 years, so
sure.
But I feel like almost like I know more of the East Coast cheesemongers now because I've done the East Coast CMI 2 years now. But yeah, it was great. I mean, I love seeing other cheese people because it's, you know, there's not many of us down here in New Orleans, and so things like this for me, it's like finding out I don't live in a bubble.
Yeah.
You know, like I know intellectually that I don't, but sometimes it starts to feel like it, and then you get to go to like CMI or one of these trips to the milk with the milk marketing board, and you're like, "Oh, my people! I get to be with my gente," and it's just it's always a great feeling. It's always a great feeling. I love seeing my people.
That's why travel and that's why travel is so important, or that's why that those community oriented things are so important, because we work really hard, and we are in a bubble a little bit, you know. We get into it, and as Jack, I'm sure you can attest, like, you know, we're kind of into what we do, those cheesemongers.
Oh yeah, definitely. Definitely. When the cheese tours were done and it was later at night, I mean, people were still talking about cheese. Like, it never stopped, and that's unbelievable and awesome. I mean, and then also, James, I'm wondering, like, I'm guessing for a cheesemonger, I mean, you said you've been before, but it's got to be easier to sell some of this cheese and be passionate about it once you've seen it being made, like, right in front of you.
Oh, 100%. Like, that's another one of the, like, totally invaluable parts of visiting cheesemakers. You can love their cheese. You can have had, you could have tasted their cheese 100 times and know everything about it. But then something, there's something weird and intrinsic when you talk face to face to these people that makes you just want to sell it even more. You know, once you've met someone who makes it, you know, it's like, you know, when you're selling it on the counter, sometimes the first thing you say about the cheese is like, oh, I've met the woman who made this, I met the man who made this. You've got, oh, they're the best, you know, and you instinctively, it just kind of comes out of you that you've formed this relationship with this person, and so you just want to help them, and so you want to sell their cheese. And I can't stress enough how important it is to see makers for mongers. It does something to you that just makes you want to sell their cheese more. And I mean, that's it. That's all I can say about that, really. It's a thing that happens. It's undeniable.
Customers want in on that relationship, and when you tell them that this is made by a friend of mine, they want in on that. You know, they that's like one of the little Jedi mind tricks of selling anything. You know, you mean like, I grew this myself, or I made this myself, or I know the people who made that. And when it's not just total BS, because it isn't, and you really believe it, that comes through, and it's easier to sell that product. It's really, really good. And I love the sensory experience. That's what I love most. I love being around the making of cheese, because just the little scents and the little flavors and textures I get when I'm at the counter, they bring me back to when I'm at those farms, when I'm in those make rooms or around those people who make it. And it just makes it that much more special for me, you know?
So. Absolutely.
I'll tell you, I'll never forget what it smelled like walking into that Limburger room. For sure. That was awesome.
Yeah, right.
It was awesome, too. I love it.
Well, you know what it's like? It's like, if you're like a car enthusiast or like a motorcycle enthusiast or something like that. Like, say you're a big fan of like a certain, I don't know, say you're like a Moto Guzzi fan, man, and then you finally get to go to Italy and go to the Moto Guzzi plant. You're like, oh, this is where they're all born, this is where all made. It's kind of like that, I think, for me with visiting cheese places. You get to see where it all comes from, because you're just, ultimately, most cheesemongers get into it because you've kind of become a fan of cheese. And, you know, you kind of root for cheese and you pull for cheese, because it's been a weird, has a weird cultural place right now in the United States. There's really awesome cheese being made here all over the country, but I don't quite think the country knows it yet. The general public, I think, has no idea what's going on under the surface. And I can't wait to see what happens in the next 5, 10, 20 years in terms of cheese and retail cheese consumption and where all these great cheeses end up in homes across America. And I think that they will. I think that this is we're on an upswing, and if the FDA doesn't throw a cog in our wheel, I think it'll be really exciting, you know, next few years.
Yeah, we're not going anywhere, dude. We're around to stay. Well, I want to thank both of you guys. James, thanks so much for giving us a little bit of your time today. Really, totally appreciate it.
Yeah, yeah.
And Jack, you know, thanks just for being you, being the man. And
thanks, Finn.
You know, and I'm glad you guys had a great trip. Thanks, Wisconsin Milk Marketing Board, as always. Stay tuned next week for more Cutting the Curd. Take care.
Thanks.
Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.